Hey everybody, welcome back to Echo Base. We are here just a couple of weeks ahead of Celebration, so we are really excited about everything going on. I think we've all started making our lists and packing stuff up and getting things going. Isn't that right, Chris?
Oh yeah, you know it.
Yeah, yeah, we're getting real excited now. We're within a month, I guess, now, right?
We've officially hit that time.
Yeah, today's Tuesday, so I think 4 weeks from tomorrow, most of us will be traveling in to Orlando, so that'll be an exciting time, so I'm looking forward to that. You might hear a missing voice here. Eric is not with us tonight, so according to our policy, everything that goes wrong tonight is Eric's fault. He said something about work or something tonight, I guess. I don't know. I mean,
he's really just hanging out with Tim and...
Yeah, I think that's the case, too. Yeah. You know? Yeah, we'll see. We'll have to give him some hell about that in Orlando when we actually get together with him. But actually, tonight we've got a special guest. I think this will be a pretty good episode of Echo Base tonight. We have a guest on tonight. Shane is here with us. Shane, how are you?
I'm very well. How are you guys?
I'm doing well.
I'm doing well.
And Shane, how do you pronounce your last name?
Turgeon.
Turgeon. Okay, great. I wasn't sure of the pronunciation, so I wanted to make sure I got that from you before I butchered it online. Shane is the organizer of the Tattoo Pavilion at Celebration, Anaheim, and this one in Orlando. And did you do one before Anaheim, too? Was there also one in Orlando before that?
Yeah, we've been organizing tattoo-related stuff all the way back since Celebration 3.
Wow.
It wasn't until Celebration 5 that we actually had live tattooing at the show, but we've been doing tattoo competitions and tattoo-related exhibits since 2003 in Celebration, or 2005 in Celebration 3.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, I had no idea you went back that far with it. My first experience of seeing it was in Anaheim. It was my first Celebration. It was 2 years ago in Anaheim. And I got to walk through there and kind of check everything. I was kind of impressed by what was going on.
Yeah, we're super old school these days.
Nice, nice. So before you had live tattooing, what was the whole experience of tattoos at Celebration?
Originally, when we first started out with it, my first Celebration that I went to was Celebration 2 in Indianapolis in 2002, and I had just kind of launched the version of my website, tattoosandtoys.com, that became that website. Previously, it was associated with another website and had been around since 1999. And Celebration 2, I just noticed, there were a whole lot of other tattooed fans out there. Not to the degree that there are now, but there were a few of us, and we were obviously, representing that level of fandom in the early days. And so through my connections and friendship with Steve Sansweet, I proposed the idea of, why don't we do a Star Wars tattoo contest, like tattoo competition, like they have at tattoo conventions. And so we agreed that we would do that at Celebration 3. So we set up a booth that exhibited a bunch of original paintings and artwork and Star Wars flash designs and Star Wars tattoo equipment and stuff that also served as a place where people could come and register for the competition over the weekend. So it was sort of a mini Star Wars tattoo museum as well as the competition. And then the competition has now run every Sunday at Celebration ever since 2005.
Awesome. That is really, I had no idea it went back that far. I had no idea Steve Sansweet was involved. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I think if he's going to have a museum of tattoo stuff or a museum in general, he's probably the guy to get involved.
Yeah, Steve is actually, despite not having any Star Wars tattoos, he has been a major, major supporter of us since day one. And he actually has a handful of pieces in his permanent collection that are related to Star Wars tattooing. And he's a big fan of what we do.
Awesome. That's very cool.
Yeah. He actually wrote the foreword to the second edition of The Force in the Flesh. So
nice. Now, was there going to be a third? And now you did the first one. And when was that released? When was the first Force in the Flesh released?
The first one came out in 2007. We released that at Celebration 4 in Anaheim. And then Volume 2 came out 2 years ago in Anaheim again. So we've got some history with LA.
Nice.
Yeah.
Is there a 3 in the works?
Volume 2 has to sell out before there will be a Volume 3, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool. So let me ask you about the process now. So if one of our fans wants to get a tattoo at Celebration, what should be kind of on their list for what they need to plan, do, talk to, get ready for?
Yeah, that's a big question right there. You know, first and foremost, you kind of have to identify what kind of Star Wars tattoo it is that you want to get. Do you want something that's very basic, you know, everything from your Imperial cog or your Rebel Alliance insignia or a Mandalorian skull? All of those things can be done by, you know, any of the artists there. But if you're wanting something like a little more stylized, to fit within a certain subject matter that you like, you want something realistic, you want something traditional, neo-traditional, then you have to basically go through the online portfolios of all of the artists that we have announced already on the Star Wars Celebration website and see whose style kind of fits with the vision of what the tattoo is that you're looking for. And then you can message and contact them directly through the Star Wars Celebration website and see if they have any availability left.
Oh, cool. Now, are those up on the site now, on Celebration site?
I believe that I would have to double check, but I know that we have announced a lot of the artists through our Inkfusion page and through like their own individual accounts and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. We have almost 50 artists that are going to be tattooing at the convention, so there's more than enough to go around for everyone.
Awesome. How does that relate to Anaheim? How many did you have there?
We had just over 40. I think we had 43 in Anaheim, and we have 48 this time.
Okay.
So it's always growing a little bit bigger, but you know, we have well over 200 people apply to tattoo at Celebration. So,
wow, that's amazing. 200 artists applied to do it?
Yeah.
Very cool. Now what is the yeah, isn't it? Well, what are the requirements for a tattoo artist to get involved in this? I mean, what kind of vetting process do you guys have for that?
Well, essentially, you know, there are a lot of people that we have worked with you know, since the beginning. And of course, those people always have, you know, right of first refusal to come back to Celebration. As we add new spaces, we're just basically looking for people who have really, really strong Star Wars portfolios, tattoo portfolios, obviously, but people who are just good all around nice people too, because there are, you know, like any industry, there are people who are really talented at what they do, but aren't really nice people. And we don't want those people working with us at Celebration.
Okay. Understandable. Well, yeah, and I ask all these questions, and I think we introduced you onto the show here because I've been planning on mine for my first tattoo for a Celebration this year. Jovial Jay put us together. He's been a friend of yours for a while, I guess, and I think he interviewed you when the first Force in the Flesh book came out.
Yeah, and, I'm latent, but I am a staff member at RebelScum.com still, so I've been working with them for... Oh, a very, very, very long time I've been affiliated with Rebel Scum.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. So we're all tangentially related here as like cousins. I guess yeah. Second cousins yeah. Twice removed by marriage, maybe.
Yeah, fandom.
There you go.
That's cool. I was in touch with you a few weeks ago. I've been talking to a few of the artists out there, and I've kind of got myself penned into a schedule. So I am getting my first ink ever. My first Star Wars ink at Celebration this year, so I'm pretty excited about that. Doing it Thursday afternoon, so I'll have the weekend to kind of talk about it and show it off, so I'm excited.
That's very cool.
What is your fandom besides that? I mean, obviously, Star Wars tattoos are important to you, but, I mean, how far back does your fandom go? I mean, you worked with Rebel Scum, so you've got some, you know, collecting experience there. What is your, you know, level of fandom, would you say?
I've always been first and foremost a vintage Star Wars collector, and I've been collecting vintage Star Wars since about 1991, and previous to that, obviously, I was a kid who played with the toys in the 80s. You know, I grew up like most of us did, you know, being in love with Star Wars as a part of the Star Wars generation, and. You know, those Christmases in 1980 and 1983 were always the best ones because they were full of all the Star Wars toys that you could imagine. And that kind of hooked me for life. But I rediscovered the toys and everything in 1991 and, you know, have been avidly collecting since. You know, I eventually moved on to, you know, specializing in prototypes and pre-production and, you know, rare foreign items and things like that. you know, to kind of have one of those, as we like to call them, the elitist collections. I've also, like, I organize toy and comic book shows here, and I've been doing that for 15 years as well. And so, you know, collecting is honestly been a part of my blood for as long as I can remember. In 2005, I helped Jeremy Beckett, another Rebel Scum staff member, co-write the official price guide to Star Wars memorabilia, and ended up writing a significant portion of that book to help Jeremy get it done on time. That was kind of my first foray into writing. And yeah, like with the aforementioned tattoosandtoys.com that I started back in 1999 became its own thing in 2002. And it was kind of like a showcase for Star Wars tattoos and other geeky tattoos, as well as really rare toys. So yeah, that's, you know, collecting is sort of the base of my fandom for sure.
Awesome. Awesome. It sounds like you've got a pretty good collection.
Yeah, I've actually, a few years ago, I did, out of necessity, have to sell about 60% of my collection off. To be honest, it was a little bit liberating, I'm not going to lie, to kind of break free of that huge weight of stuff holding you down. You know, I tell people that I sold about 60 to 70% of my collection, and then they walk into my house and they're like, I thought you sold your stuff. I did. I just had a lot of stuff.
I had a lot more than you think, yeah. But, you know, that's a pretty good point, actually, because, you know, we do all get attached to stuff, and I've got stuff up in the attic that's just boxed up that hasn't seen the light of day in years. And, yeah, you know, it's like, I really like it. I'm like, it's hard to part with, but yeah, I can see how that would be liberating to get rid of some stuff that you just don't need to carry around, almost like extra baggage.
Yeah, and you know, to be honest, like I said, it was out of necessity. I here in Edmonton, I own a tattoo toy and comic book store as well, and it's you know, the first year of business was very, very, very difficult. In order to keep putting food on my table, I had to make some sacrifices and to pay the bills, and you know, the collection helped me get through that.
Right.
And so when you start looking at your boxed vintage box snow speeder or TIE fighter or things like that as groceries, it becomes a lot easier to sell.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, there's always those necessities and we don't like that, but I mean, for a new business, that's usually a big investment. I mean, you know, any kind of retail establishment, there's usually a huge capital requirement to get started. And the first few years can be kind of lean in any business. Until you get a following,
you know, and it was worth it at the end of the day, because we're, you know, coming into our seventh year now and going strong. So,
oh, that's great.
Yeah, it needed to be done. So it, like I said, it was personally kind of a little liberating, I'm not going to lie. So
awesome. Now, as far as, you know, collecting, I mean, obviously you go back a ways with collecting. Movies, are you a prequel hater, or do you enjoy the whole franchise as it is?
I would fall in the prequel hater camp. I'm not going to lie about that.
Okay. I mean, hey, we all have to own that if we do. I mean, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly don't begrudge the people who enjoy them. Everybody experiences it in their own way. But I've always described myself as a fan of the original trilogy and a vintage toy collector. So the modern collectibles don't really interest me very much, and the prequels especially don't interest me. Okay. I did enjoy Force Awakens for what it was, and I absolutely loved Rogue One. Mm-hmm. So it kind of brought me back, and there was a part of me that was like, you know, I just finished watching Rogue One for the second time in the theater, and I might go to Toys R Us and see what toys are on the maybe come home with a Jyn Erso for myself or something. But
there you go. Well, you know, I mean, Rogue One doesn't, you know, bring us back to the original trilogy too, so I think it kind of fits in more there than with the prequels.
Yeah.
At least for me. I mean, I'm a fan of the original trilogy myself, and I grew up with those movies as a kid, so seeing this again brought me all back to that time when I was, you know, 10, 12, 15 years old. It was great.
Yeah. I always like to tell the story of, my mom took me to see The Empire Strikes Back in the theater when I was maybe 2.5, 3 years old. I was bugging her that I wanted to see this movie. And I always thought that I had fallen asleep in the movie, and she's like, no, I was dozing off constantly, and every time I woke up and I looked over at you, your jaw was just wide open.
That's awesome.
There were multiple points during Rogue One, my first viewing of Rogue One, where I caught myself with my jaw wide open, just like wide-eyed at the screen. I'm like, okay, I'm 3 years old again, back in the movie theater, experiencing the Star Wars that I have wanted since 1983.
Yeah, I think a lot of us did. I mean, Chris grew up with the prequels because Chris is a little younger than I am. So, you know, his experience is a little different. But, you know, you love Rogue One as much as we do, don't you, Chris?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I mean,
I probably liked it a little bit more than TFA, to be honest.
Yeah, you know, it's the one movie that I think fans can gravitate to, whether they were, you know, prequel age kids or original trilogy age kids. They all seem to like Rogue One. It just feels like Star Wars to everybody, I think. So,
yeah, and I think they did a really good job of keeping the prequel elements that were pretty awesome and merging them into the original trilogy elements.
Yeah, it does almost feel like it's a, I don't know, encounter session, because we're actually getting fans of both trilogies back together again now with Rogue One. I mean, that's what it feels like to me, at least. It feels almost like a therapy session, because we're bringing everybody into the same fold now, and we all can all find something in the movie that we really enjoy.
Yeah, no one's yelling at each other about, you know, how terrible it is, what they like.
Right, right. We were having that discussion on Slack, I think it was this morning, wasn't it, Chris?
Yeah.
Amongst all the fans about what movie and what characters they'd want to see and bring back and change, and I don't know, it's just, it, you know, the talk about changing the prequels to be what we want them to be, I think, is never going to happen. They are what they are, and they're part of the mythology, and we'll just kind of let them be, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, and I think it's one of those things where everybody in I think pop culture fandom across the board these days takes everything way too seriously.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, if you don't like it, shut up and don't like it. And if you do like it, tell people that you like it, and that's that. Like, everybody just gets so up in arms and so easily offended about, you know, how this film was not what they expected, so it was terrible, and anybody who likes it is an idiot. And it's like, come on.
Exactly.
Like, get over yourself and let people who enjoy things enjoy it for what it is.
Mm-hmm. No, I feel the exact same way. If you have, you know, it's almost like the old saying, if you have nothing nice to say, don't say anything at all.
Totally.
There's no reason to put somebody else down for what they like or what they believe. It's just, hey, you know, let it be and do your own thing.
Yeah. We don't even have to have a discussion about it. You like it, I don't. Let's leave it at that. Talk about stuff that we all like.
Right. So now, as far as Celebration goes, now, are you going to have any time to yourself to do the typical fan stuff that we're all going to get to do? I mean, or are you so wrapped up in the Tattoo Pavilion you don't really have any time to get away?
I'm pretty wrapped up in the Tattoo Pavilion for sure. Mark Draven, who is the co-curator of the entire Star Wars Tattoo Pavilion, and he runs Ink Fusion. So he oversees a lot of the tattoo artists and everything that they're doing and what they bring to the table. And then I kind of, you know, as the author of The Force and the Flesh, sit there and hope people come and want to purchase the books, and I can be there to sign them and stuff like that. But, you know, I've honestly never really seen a whole lot of Celebration since I've started doing components for it. I get to do the stuff that I make a point to do the stuff that I really love. As a vintage collector, I'm quite often asked to participate in the Star Wars collecting track by giving a panel. I've done a panel at every Celebration since Celebration 4, I think. And this is the first year where I'm not giving a panel, so maybe I can use that time to duck away and see a couple of the panels that my friends will be putting on that I'll want to check out.
Nice.
For really, Celebrations for me is all about the community and just getting to hang out with my family. I really don't care about a lot of the kind of the fan stuff. It's more going there to hang out with the people that have been good friends through collecting for the past 20-some years for myself.
Cool. And that's, you know, everybody's got their own thing for what Celebration is to them. And actually, that's what I think we're going to have on our next episode of A Couple Bays, talking about, you know, what you want to get out of Celebration as yourself, and what you, you know, what are your must-haves, you know, your can't-misses, and then stuff that you say, oh, if I can get to see it, great. If I don't, you know, no big deal. We had the same thing at Celebration Anaheim. Chris and I were kind of tied up on our little podcast stage for most of the time, so we didn't really get to do a lot of the stuff that was out there, but, you know, we still had a great time because it was all about interacting with, you know, people you meet there and fans and just enjoying the whole experience of Celebration.
Well, so, you know, in being part of the show, you get to experience it on a whole different level that other people wouldn't as well. So sure, you might miss, you know, the, you know, whatever exhibit or this activity or things like that. But on the flip side, you're also doing stuff that is super fun and people, you know, aren't going to do, but you get to, you know, help people see that through your eyes. So I think that's really important. You know, it's not always about what you get to do. It's about what you get to give back.
Yeah, that's true too. That's very true. Let's see, Chris, should we go right into our, interrogation now?
Yeah, that sounds
I didn't
like
really
a good
warn
idea.
Shane about this, but we all of our guests we do a little standard interrogation. You know, nothing too empire-ish, but we have some standard questions that we're going to ask, and we just kind of get your feedback on each one of these. So
I'm having visions of a black droid with a needle coming behind me.
Don't worry, I don't have one of those.
I should have that sound effect, but I don't. Unfortunately, I don't have that on my soundboard here. But yes, I'm going to let Chris now ask you some questions, and we're going to just see where you are on some of these Star Wars related fan experiences.
Sure.
All right. So, first question: what was your intro to Star Wars?
My intro to Star Wars was The Empire Strikes Back in 1980 when I was about 3 years old, 2.5, 3 years old. My mom took me to that. And I'm sure there was probably something to do with the toys in there too. I was, friends of mine probably had the toys, which got me interested in the movie. But it was definitely that first viewing in 1980.
Cool. What is your favorite Star Wars movie, and what do you think is the best Star Wars movie?
Well, I'm going to start sounding like a one-trick pony here, and it's going to go right back to The Empire Strikes Back.
Nothing wrong with that.
To me, it is the perfect film. It is the perfect middle act. It is the perfect setup for, a happier ending. It's always one of those things where you watch it when you're having a bad day, and you know that you could put on Return of the Jedi anytime you want and feel better. But Empire Strikes Back probably reflects the mood that, that you're in when you're sad or you're upset. And, it's visually, it's just so arresting. Everything from, Hoth wasn't always that exciting as a kid growing up in Canada, I can assure you. but Dagobah and Bespin in particular is just a mind blowing environment for me. And I've been drawn to it ever since I was a kid. Just across the board, it is a perfect film and a perfect story.
Yeah, I don't think you're the first person to say all that.
Nope.
So what is your favorite Star Wars book?
My favorite Star Wars book? I haven't read a whole lot of stuff probably since the late 90s. But I really, really enjoyed the Tales from the Mos Eisley Cantina and Tales from Jabba's Palace. I thought those had a really, really great narrative in how they weaved everything in, not only to the movies, but into the stories themselves, especially considering that they were written by a lot of other different people and then kind of overseen by Kevin J. Anderson in terms of the editing. But I thought those books were phenomenal.
Who is your favorite Star Wars character?
Yoda, hands down.
Nice.
I feel like Yoda is one of those that people don't say a lot. Like, they appreciate him, but they don't say their answer.
Yeah, not many people say they're his favorite, but definitely a cool character.
Yeah, an original trilogy Yoda, not this flipping, jumping around.
Although I did like the way, you get done with the fight, he was flipping all over the place, jumping around, then he grabs his cane and hobbles back out again. wait, where'd that come from?
That was a nice little touch.
It was.
But yeah, the wisdom that Yoda exudes in those two movies, and I don't know, he's just out of this rad little Buddha,
Mm-hmm. So if you had to pick, would you be a Jedi, Sith, Rebel, or Imperial?
Oh, I'd be a Rebel. I'm all about the rogues and the scoundrels and the smugglers and the seedy underbelly. I remember when the Star Wars role-playing game was still... Well, it was when the second edition came out in the early 90s, and playing that with friends in high school. And I could care less about all of the big galactic empire and the ships and the rebellion and all those kind of things. I wanted to know what was going on in the seedy bowels of Coruscant and how all that stuff played out. I always thought that was really intriguing.
So what is your most treasured Star Wars item? I'm curious about this one since you said you were a collector.
Right.
Well, I have... I have to pick one?
Yeah.
It's a ridiculous caveat to this. Picking one Star Wars item. Well, if I have to pick one, I'm going to say that I have my childhood Snowspeeder and my childhood Slave One. And I think those, above all else, would trump everything, just because they were what, you know, a part of what really set me on a course for my life that I never, ever, ever anticipated having. You know, I'm so thankful for the opportunities I've been given, simply because I've managed to translate, you know, a small part of an overall fandom of a handful of space movies, you know, and it has literally taken me around the world. It's given me the opportunity to work with Lucasfilm. It's allowed me to write books and has given me my best friends ever that I could hope for. And, you know, so those two ships from when I was 3 years old are indicative of all of that.
That's cool. That's an awesome answer. I like when you can associate things back to your childhood.
Right. Now, if I'm going to go with the collector answer, I might go with, and I'm giving you two, I don't care. I have the original Canadian store display for the first 12 figures, and it has the La Guerre des Étoiles pyramid logo on it. So it's one of the 12 bin headers. And at the time mine turned up, I think there was only 6 known in the world, and there are maybe 10 now.
Oh, wow.
And it's, to me, that's just such a great piece, because it's a store display. It's distinctly Canadian. It's super rare.
Awesome. Yeah, that's cool. That's really cool.
Yeah. Oh, but then there's a whole other list of stuff, like the 12-inch Lily Letty Tusken Raider, the vintage one, and I have an Italian Star Wars 4-sheet movie poster framed in my movie room, and it goes on and on and on.
Cool. So what is your favorite Star Wars quote?
Do or do not. There is no try.
I'm not surprised that it is a
no. No, that quote fits in. Yep, that's good.
Yep, it's. I mean, man, that quote applies to everything.
Mm-hmm.
It really does, and you see it crop up in a lot of just pop culture these days too.
Yeah. Yep.
So, with the new movies, do you like to search out spoilers, or do you go in with as little information as possible?
I go in with as little information as possible. I will watch the trailers. I'm a big fan of trailers. Doesn't matter what it is. Honestly, one of my favorite parts of the cinema going experience is the trailers. So I always watch the trailers, and that is it. I don't want to know anything else. I didn't even know the names of the characters going into Rogue One.
Awesome. I love that answer, because I do the same thing.
Yeah, I want to be surprised.
I even stay away from TV spots in the weeks before the movie, because the TV spots give away more stuff. I'm like, no, I've seen the trailer. I don't want to see any more TV spots.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I want to, you know, what is the point of going into a movie where you know everything is going to happen?
Yeah,
exactly.
Exactly.
So stupid. It's like, I don't want you to knock my socks off or not.
Yep, no, I want to be totally surprised. And I will bring this up again. I know I've said it probably nauseatingly times on the podcast over the years, but I still hate the Phantom Menace trailer that gave away the dual-bladed lightsaber from Maul.
Totally.
That should have been in the movie, and I should have been like, oh my God, you know, but no, we knew it was coming.
Yep.
Were you unspoiled for TFA?
Yeah, 100%.
Oh, you're lucky.
Yeah. I mean, I
had Han's death spoiled for me.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, you should have punched whoever did that.
Yeah. Well, it was over the internet, and someone tweeted to our podcast account, so I really couldn't avoid it. And it was on the day the movie came out, too. So.
No.
That's just
wrong.
People who do that sort of a thing, there's a special place in hell reserved for them.
Yes.
Like,
yes, there is.
Back and bite them in the ass in a big, big way. Because, man, like, what kind of a dick do you got to be to do that?
That's true.
Yep. Oh, I know. It's just, why would you want to do that to somebody else? You know, it's like people that talk about stuff as they're leaving the movie, and there's a line waiting to get in. It's like, no, why are you doing that?
Just don't, yeah, you know, and really, it just comes to the fact that people have, you know, those kinds of people lead really sad, miserable existences, and that's how they get off, you know?
Yeah. True.
So we've got 3 more questions for you.
All right.
What would be your dream job in the Star Wars universe?
Ooh. That's an interesting one, hey? I don't know. I think just being a smuggler would be really cool.
Flying badass
spaceships and dodging the law, and yeah. hiding away and being a scoundrel. Yeah, that's where that would be at.
So where were you when you first learned that Disney had purchased Lucasfilm, and what was your initial reaction?
I think I was at my shop when that happened. And to be honest, I was really happy. I'm gonna probably anger a few people with my following statement, but that's fine. I anger people all the time. I think George Lucas is a bit of a hack. And ooh. I think that he got really lucky with the first movie, by surrounding himself with a team of unbelievably talented people who made his vision come to life for him. He didn't direct or write Empire Jedi, and that shows in the strength of Empire in particular. You put the ball back in his court with the prequels, and that's, well, you got what you got with that. They are not good films. They are poorly written. They are poorly directed. And I think it needed to be taken away from him.
Hmm.
When you have somebody who at one point testified to Congress that people should not be allowed to change their films, and they should, you know, then that the original version should be preserved and allowed for generations to see from a filmmaking perspective, and who refuses to release those original versions after terrible edits that he made to them, it all needed to come away from him, and it needed to be put back in the hands of people who understood the fans and understood the universe better than he did. And I know that that's an unpopular opinion with the George Lucas apologists, as I call them.
Yeah, I mean, it is and it isn't, though. I mean, we had that discussion before on the show about, you know, hey, you know, George has got a great vision. He's, you know, he brought us all this idea, but he's not a great director. You just can't get the performances out of these actors that we'd like to see.
No.
And you put it in somebody else's hands, and great. You know, let somebody else that can tell a story or write a story, especially dialogue, you mm-hmm. know, handle that a lot better than he could. He's got a great vision, and he got so wrapped up, I think, in the prequels of the technical things he wanted to do with it,
yeah.
that I think he lost sight of what the vision was supposed to be on screen.
Yeah, and I think he surrounded himself with yes-men. I mean, Irving Kirshner's on record as saying that, you know, George would come up with these horrible ideas during Empire, and they'd all look at me like, no, George, that's stupid. And they'd do it. And, yep. you know, he just surrounded himself with people who were like, oh, George, you're the greatest, that's brilliant, George, that's brilliant for the prequels. And, you know, well, it wasn't.
Right.
So our final question is, what is your most memorable Star Wars experience?
You know, I've been asked that a few times, and I really don't know how to answer that properly, because I've had so many. You know, the first time I went to Skywalker Ranch, you know, probably ranks up there for sure. Having Steve Sansweet, who is somebody that, you know, not only is a very dear friend of mine, but who, you know, I basically cut my teeth on all of his books as a young collector. Write the foreword to my last book was an incredibly humbling experience. In the introduction to that book, I also talk about how Robin Williams was given a copy of my first book 3 months before he passed away, and how he loved it. And so knowing that Robin, like, my work put a smile on Robin Williams's face at a time that he didn't want to is incredibly surreal.
Wow.
And just being able to, you know, honestly travel the world and have the friendships that I have, I'm every day I kind of have to pinch myself because of the volume of experiences that I've had and the quality of experience that I have. And I am just so grateful for it every day. You know, I announced on Facebook a little while ago that this is actually my last celebration in doing all the Star Wars tattoo stuff. I'm kind of moving away from that chapter of my life, and it is a little hard to do, because it is something that I've been so involved in for, you know, 18 years now, in building the Star Wars tattoo community up to where it is. And, you know, it is hard to walk away, but I am so grateful for everything that it's given me, for sure.
Wow. That's an amazing answer.
Yeah.
gets me kind of choked up just hearing about all those experiences and how close it hits to you. And that's amazing when it's that intimate and that personal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and I think that, I don't think it's hit me yet, how emotional maybe this last celebration is going to be for me on the last day and during the last tattoo competition. Cause it's, unless somebody else, you know, decides to take it over, which I don't think will happen, this will be the last Star Wars tattoo competition that we host at Celebration as well.
Oh, wow.
Mm.
So perhaps the greatest experience is yet to come.
Well, there you go. Now, That was the end of our interrogation section of the interview. But is that something you want to talk about more? You know, why you decided to make this your last celebration doing the Tattoo Pavilion and Tattoo Contest? Or
yeah, I mean it's you know it's not a really big thing. It's just honestly the culture of it isn't what it used to be. You know, back in the day there was a small tight-knit community of people who just really liked Star Wars tattoos and, you know, who had, we were kind of misfits in both the tattoo world and in the Star Wars world, because there weren't a lot of Star Wars fans who had tattoos. And a lot of people in the tattoo industry in the late 90s were like, why do you want a Star Wars tattoo? That's stupid. You know, there wasn't the fans, of it that there are now. And these days it's so big and it feels like it's been reduced to nothing but like BuzzFeed clickbait and, you know, all of this kind of stuff. And it feels like the heart and soul of it's kind of disappeared. And, you know, there's other things that I want to do with my life too. And it just seems like a good time to walk away from it, because my heart doesn't feel as in it as it used to be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know that there's more to my own personal legacy than a couple of Star Wars tattoo books and, you know, coordinating these kinds of events.
Sure. And, you know, you actually brought up a good point there. I mean, getting out of something when it no longer drives you is actually a good thing. Mm-hmm. You know, too many times in both, you know, professional and, you know, non-professional worlds, people stay in things too long and then everything suffers about that. You know, their performance suffers, people that enjoy that person and what they do suffers. It's just, yeah, it's a good time to get out.
Yeah, and like I said, I've been doing this for 18 years. I mean, that's almost two decades.
That's a lot of time.
Yeah, being at the forefront of, you know, what ultimately has become this huge, huge world of Star Wars tattoos.
Yep. I had no idea you were doing this long and it was that big. I am amazed at that, to tell you the truth, but I am excited to get into that world. So
yeah, and we're excited to have you come into it, you know, like every time we, you know, we call it, it's, you know, and then the tattoo industry, we call it popping cherries when you give somebody their first tattoo. Yep. And to give somebody their first tattoo, that's a Star Wars tattoo, you know, as a, you know, all of the artists that we have at the show are fans. And so they know the importance of what that is to not only give somebody their first tattoo, but to make sure that it's an awesome Star Wars tattoo. It's a very wonderful experience for everyone.
Awesome. Awesome. I am definitely looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to meeting you while I'm there.
Yeah,
definitely have to get one of your books and have you sign it for me.
Happy to do that.
Awesome. So I think unless you've got anything else for Shane, I think we're going to kind of wrap up this episode.
I do have one question for people who are considering going to Celebration to get a tattoo. Aside from some of the stuff that you talked about earlier, do you have any more advice, like what to expect, or you know, any tips maybe?
Yeah, seek out, you know, do advanced research into the artists and try to pre-book if you can. A lot of the guys who have been doing this from, you know, since day one with us and who are incredibly well known as Star Wars tattooers, they're probably already booked. So if, you know, you're expecting and you want to go get a Matt Diffa or an Adam Hayes tattoo, you know, two guys who have been at the forefront of this for years and years and years, chances are you're not going to be able to make that happen. So seek out all of the different artists that we do have there and try to do so in advance. The artists do usually always end up booking up, and it might sound like, you know, that's a lot that we have 48 artists there, and it is a lot, but they'll book up for the entire weekend, which, you know, you can go to a small regional tattoo convention and there's not even 50 artists there who are not busy the whole time. So the fact that we've created our own little tattoo convention within this large convention says a lot about the power of Star Wars tattoos these days.
That is pretty amazing when you think about 4 days and 48 artists.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll be booked up for the entire time. That is pretty amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, no, I do feel pretty happy that I've got Betsy Butler doing my tattoo on that first day there. So I'm excited and nervous all at the same time. And what was that?
Betsy's super rad. She's a talented artist and a sweetheart.
Awesome. Yeah, I've loved your work online, and we've been chatting back and forth. And we finally booked the time, and we're good to go. So
awesome.
Well, I think I'm going to wrap this up then at this point. So let's see. Send us any feedback you want to at echobase@randomchatter.com. That's the best way to get a hold of us via email. And anyway, any questions, anything you want us to cover, any questions you have about Celebration, please forward them on to us there. Chris, do you have show notes up? Or?
I don't, but I think I can take it from here. I've done this enough that I think I have it by memory now.
Okay.
All right. So you can find us on social media. We have our Facebook accounts. It's facebook.com/randomchatternetwork. The Twitter accounts we have are at Echobase Podcast. That's the show Twitter. Our network Twitter is at Random Chatter. My Twitter is at The Curse of Chris. Lewis, what is your Twitter?
Luseki. That's Luseki.
And Shane, do you have any social media accounts?
I have far too many social media accounts. but the book can be followed on Instagram at The Force in the Flesh and on Twitter at Star Wars Tattoos.
All right, cool. Lou, do you want to go on now? I don't have the notes.
Sure.
I don't know where we're at.
No problem. You can find all of our other shows over at randomchatter.com. There's almost too many to list these days, so I'm not going to go through them all, but be sure to listen to our other Star Wars shows. The Outer Rim and Ghost Stories are two of the other shows we do for Star Wars. Of course, spread the news about us. If you want to leave a review on iTunes, that'd be great. Stitcher as well. And then just tell your friends about us. If you get into this stuff and they're into the same stuff you are, they might be interested in hearing a show as well. We're bringing back our live shows, probably not until after Celebration. Eric's been the one to do the live streaming, and he's actually traveling quite a bit right now. So I would imagine after Celebration, we'll be back doing live shows on Tuesday nights.
Mm-hmm.
We want to thank all of our Patreon supporters. If you want to find out more information about how to support the network, go to patreon.com/randomchatter. We really do appreciate everybody on there, and anybody that does get into any kind of level of donation to us is available to come into our Slack channel, too, so they can get in there and interact with us on a daily basis and keep us entertained all day, and we'll keep you entertained all day.
I hope we keep you entertained.
Well, yeah, sometimes more than others. But the music you hear at the end is The Imperial March by Cell Dweller. And until next time, take care.
The Force will be with you always.